go. There's a podcast site which has all the talks on it, and which is on Podbean, Dharma Punks on Podbean. So if it's if you miss any, you could definitely. Thank you, Barclay. the Buddha is responsible for, or at least according to the Pali Canon, the Buddha is responsible for a massive amount of teachings. I've been studying for decades, and I've only really studied in depth a fraction of the thousands upon thousands of pages that are in the Pali Canon. There are huge volumes just dedicated to monastic life, and then there's volume after volume of teachings. And yet, given all this and the wonderful, wonderful teachings inside of it, stuff that thrills me decade after decade, just, you know, getting deeper into it. One of the things that drew me to deeper and deeper into the teachings of early Buddhism, or the Pali Canon, or the Theravada, however you want to refer to it, is what the Buddha didn't teach. There are a lot of spiritual paths that basically want to tell you, not just give you wonderful insights as to what will relieve you of stress and suffering, but would have, if you would believe them, these spiritual paths would tell you that the earth is 6,000 years old, and that at one point man walked around with dinosaurs, and that there was an ark, and that apparently all the animals that survived were in this ark, and there were only two of each, and they all multiplied somehow and repopulated the earth. And there's all these teachings that are in so many spiritual paths that would have us tell us how to, you know, exactly what kind of foods we can eat and exactly what kind of clothes we can wear and all that stuff. It just builds up to the point of it just becomes smothering. And the Buddha was pretty much alone, or very in a limited crowd of spiritual teachers, in that he was just as rigorous saying what he wasn't going to teach about as what he was. And there's much to learn about where he said, this is not important, or this is not something that I know, or this is not something that I'm going to teach, even though I might know it, it's not helpful to really ponder. To start with, there was, in his numbered discourses, there's a teaching called the Imponderables. And the Buddha says in the Imponderables, there are four things that are going to lead to just stress and suffering if you try to figure them out. One is, where did the cosmos come from, and what's the whole point of life? So already he's throwing out all of cosmology, and he's saying, I'm not going to give you an origin story. There's not going to be any God who's going to create the world in a certain amount of time. It's not important to what I'm teaching. I'm just not going to go there, because it's not what is my concern, which is reducing stress and suffering and bringing about peace. That's all he taught. He said all of his teachings boiling down to how can we see what causes suffering and how can we let it go so we can develop peace. And that's it. That's all he taught. Still, that's a big subject. In the other Imponderables, he said it's imponderable how the future will play out. So you're not going to find any revelations. There's not going to be any circle of angels and demons. And although Revelations is a pretty fucking cool book of the Bible, if you ever read it, because it's just insane Right? If you ever want to write a great heavy metal song, just, you know, you're really into tech metal or math metal, and you want to write, like, Meshuggah-like lyrics, just look at, you don't know what I'm talking about. All right, anyway, just look at Revelations. You'll write a great heavy metal song. It's really cool imagery in there. But it's insane, okay? It's just crazy. But, and so the Buddha is like, nah, we're not going to talk about how the future will play out. We're not going to talk about where the universe came from. We're not going to talk about what the limits of knowledge are. We're not going to talk about whether the soul is the exact same thing as the body or not. We're not going to talk about how much peace is ultimately possible for the mind. He, you know, he puts a lot of things into those four and Panda rules. But basically, there's another teaching called the Water Snake Sutta, where the Buddha says that all of his teachings are like a raft. And that to know how to use his teachings correctly is to view it as a raft that takes you across the shore. But then once you get to the other side, you should be able to put it all down and not carry it around and not beat up other people with it. And definitely don't proselytize. There's no proselytizing in the Buddha's spiritual path. So what he was about was simply using which teachings were useful to get to a place where the mind is peaceful enough that we didn't have to think about the teachings anymore and then put them down. They're not supposed to be something where we're really peaceful and then we're thinking, oh, okay, now I got to start thinking again about the Four Noble Truths. That's his. He uses that as an example as wrong understanding. Right understanding is just using whatever insight you need to bring about, to help you bring about peace, and then let it go. There's a famous teaching called the Simsapa, where the Buddha is standing in a forest, the Simsapa forest. The Simsapa is a tree. I've never seen it. I don't know what it looks like, but apparently it has a lot of leaves. And the Buddha was standing there holding a bunch of leaves in his hands. And he said to his students, what is greater, the leaves in my hand or the leaves of all the Simsapa trees in the forest around us? Now, if ever a spiritual teacher asks you that question, you know you're being set up. Don't just go with the wrong answer. Just say the leaves in your hand, because you know if you say the obvious, you're just going to be shown up. He's setting you up. So they say, well, of course, the leaves and all the forest. And the Buddha says, well, actually, the leaves in my hand are all I teach. They're all you need to know. The leaves in all of the forest represent all of my wisdom. If I wanted to, you know, if I wanted to figure out everything, that's what that would be. But the only thing that's important is these leaves in my hand, what I can carry around and what I can teach. If we're trying to drag and fill up our minds with all this stuff, then it's not doing us what the goal is, which is to achieve some tranquility and peace and calm in life. When I was in college, I was it was the time when deconstruction was really big. And we would, whenever there was a new text by Derrida or Foucault or Lacan or Bourdieu that would come out, we'd all go screaming to the bookstore and immediately steal the book because we had no money. And we'd pour through it because this was going to be the book that would have the answer to everything. There's something about, certainly my mind, but I think there's something about the human mind that really wants to have an ideological roadmap that will explain it all, so that we have this illusion that we'll never, ever have to encounter discomfort ever again. And if we just had this one or two roadmaps that would just explain, you know, what's the right thing politically, psychologically, spiritually, how should I talk to my roommate, and by the way, why is the economy falling apart, and just explain it all, right? You know, we want a roadmap for it all. And, you know, of course, the thing is that there is no such thing. There is no such thing as an ideological roadmap that will explain the world, explain the mind, explain it all for us. It's just the mind itself. It's so complex, filled with so many different neural possibilities, trillions of connections, capable of wiring in so many untold ways, that just looking for something alone that will help us reduce our stress and suffering is enough. This brings me to one of my favorite teachings of all, which is the Kalamas Sutta. The Kalamas were a group of people that were always inviting spiritual teachers of the Buddhist time to come through. And many famous Hindu teachers, I think Dr. Ramaputra went through there, there were many different Brahmins that went through there, all different. In the Buddhist time, there were actually sort of what we would think of now as Rastafarians, guys who grew their hair really long and matted and smoked pot all the time. And they had a philosophy too, and they probably came marching through there, you know, playing reggae, and probably not. But there was a lot of different teachers. And when the Buddha comes through, they come up to him and they say, "We've heard amazing things about you, but what we really want to know is, why should we believe anything that you say? Because everybody that comes through here says, don't believe the person, the spiritual teacher before me. Don't believe anybody else but me. You know? I'm the one with the answer." And the Buddha answers in a very amazing way. He says, "Don't believe me. Don't believe me. Don't believe anything you've been taught. Don't believe anything that's been passed down through logic or inference or what everybody around you believes, what you've been taught by educators, what you've been taught by spiritual teachers. Don't believe what you've been taught by your parents. Don't believe any of it." Well, this is pretty startling stuff. And it stands pretty much alone. It's one of the most startling spiritual teachings in any book that I've encountered. And so the Buddha continues, "It's only when you see for yourself, in your own experience, that something causes long-term stress and suffering. When you've seen for yourself that you know that that's something that is unwise. When you've seen for yourself that something brings about peace, then you know that's something that is worth cultivating. And continue to see for yourself." And then he goes on further. He says to the Kalamas, "So, in your own experience, not in anything I'm going to bring to you, in your own experience, does harm, wishing harm for another person, does that in the long term make you feel better about yourself or make your interactions with people better?" And they say, "No." And then he says, "Have you seen for yourself when you harbor thoughts of greed and accumulation, does that bring about a peaceful mind for yourself and make for better interactions with other people?" And they say, "No, in our experience, it doesn't." And then he says, "Well, what about self-centered thoughts, all about, you know, that confusion that comes from self-centeredness?" And again, "No." And then he turns it to the inverse. "Well, what about thoughts that are not harmful, that are not about greed, but are about letting go of stuff? What about those thoughts?" And they say, "Well, those thoughts actually, in the long term, make us feel better about ourselves." And the Buddha says, "From that, you can build your own spiritual path. You can build by watching, by observing. You yourself can build a foundation for your own path to release from suffering." So it's not something that comes from a teacher. It's not something that comes from without. It's something that comes from our own practice. And there's a famous saying over one of the largest Buddhist schools, I think it's in Thailand, but But the saying goes, 10,000 students, 10,000 Buddhisms. Or 10,000, yeah, 10,000 Buddhisms or religions. The idea is each person has their own version. There is no single Buddhism or spiritual path. What works for you might be Hinduism, Hindu Buddhism, Buddha Christianity, Buddha Judaism, your own, whatever works. Whatever you find right now is bringing your mind lasting peace and causing less stress in your interactions with the world. That is your path. And we have to bring our awareness again and again back to this moment. It's not about looking for that booklet or that leaflet or that pamphlet or that, you know, that whatever that will have the answers. Right now, at this moment, Monday, you know, at 7:50, August 15th, what's going on inside of each one of us? Where is there contraction and tension that I can release? What thoughts am I carrying around obsessively that I'm not allowing myself to put down? What am I trying to figure out that can't be figured out right now? And that's probably one of the most important things for me to learn as every know-it-all on the planet, you know, as a card-carrying member, what I've had to work a lot on is this being comfortable with not knowing. You know, because I really want to believe that if I give my mind enough time, it'll have a good opinion about everything. And it'll be able to tell you why this band is better than that band, and this writer is better than that writer, and this TV show is better than that. By the way, Breaking Bad is better than them all, but that's all right. What movie is, you know, I'll have an opinion on everything. Because my mind doesn't like not knowing. Whenever there's something new in life, my mind wants to know. And yet, really, I have to tell you that most of the time in life, really, I don't have a fucking clue what's going on. It's just I'm telling myself that I do. But deep down inside, if I'm like, not aware of what's going on right here, right now, in the body, in the mind, what the attitude is, what the mental energy level is like, what is my predominant attitude towards the world? Am I coming at the world from a place of open-heartedness, or am I being rigid? If I'm not aware of that, then I really don't know what's going on. And most of the time, anyway, I just don't. Life is constantly throwing me new challenges that I don't even know how I'll pay the rent or how I'll do this or that, you know? And that's good. Not knowing is a really important thing for the mind to be comfortable with, because there are more and more in life as we move on through this journey, there are a lot of things we're not going to know that are going to be very important. There are people who get possible diagnoses of diseases. There are times where we don't know whether we're going to get jobs or what's going to happen with something that we submit or what's going to happen with someone we love or what's going to happen with a family member or how is this going to play out, and we don't know. And how are we going to be with not knowing? And that's, I think, a really amazing thing about what the Buddha is preparing. In one of his teachings to Washagoda, Washagoda comes and asks him a question that the Buddha clearly does know the answer, but he refuses to answer because he sees that it's just going to cause Washagoda confusion and stress. And when Washagoda walks away, Anatta, the Buddha's attendant, says, "Well, why did you not answer him? You know the answer to that." And the Buddha says, "Because he's not ready right now. He needs to just not know. He just needs to not know." It would have been so easy for the Buddha to say, the answer is you don't have any, because the guy's asking about a lasting self. Is there a lasting self or not? And the Buddha clearly knows there is no lasting self, but he doesn't answer. He just sits there and says, "I'm not going to answer that." Because if I tell you the right answer, you're going to freak out. You're not going to make anything good out of it. You're just going to turn it into this constant mental, this obsessive, what we call in Pali, papancha, which is just, it's just going to turn over and over in your mind, and you're not going to be able to do anything with it. So it's not a place for your mind to go. And that's something to really wonder about. When a thought comes in, when I'm starting to try to figure out all these parts of my life, is this really a place where I need to have an explanation? Sometimes the best thing is just to be with this feeling of, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening, rather than freaking out and coming up with a story. I'll give you an example. When we go through a breakup, the first thing we want to do is figure out, okay, what the fuck happened here? Why did I date this person? What shouldn't I should have seen this. I should have seen the fact that she was this or that, the other thing. I should have seen that he was this or that or the other thing. I should have picked up on the signs, or I shouldn't date when I'm in between jobs, or when I'm in a job, or when I'm in a job or not in a job. I shouldn't date blondes. I should date blondes. I shouldn't date people over 5'6". I shouldn't date Republicans. I should only date Republicans. I should not. The mind wants to go in and have a rule, an explanation. It wants to define, describe reality, and make it all go away. And of course, the real question is, that doesn't help at all. The real question is, can I be with this feeling of, I've just broken up with someone? Can I just be with that feeling? That's where the real letting it go and the real moving on comes from. It doesn't come from having this neat little explanation that you're not going to follow through anyway with. I know I don't. Even when I come up with a rule, well, I'm never going to do this again, then I immediately do that again anyway. So the rules we come up with anyway, generally we don't follow. But what we do grow from is the not knowing and the experience of just being with things. So again and again, just bring our awareness back to what's happening now. How can I bring peace into my life now? I don't need to know the answer for tomorrow or the explanation for everything. I just need to know right now, how can I reduce the mental agitation that I'm carrying around in my life? See which thoughts are interrupting my meditation, because those are the thoughts that I'm putting too much emphasis on in my life. I'm carrying them around too much. See which thoughts are bringing me peace. That's where the foundation of my spiritual path is. So thank you for listening. I hope you got something from tonight. And now it's your turn to ask any questions or share anything you'd like to share. And thank you for listening.
I'm going to turn this off.